Thank you. And thank you to the organisers for inviting me to speak in this session. When I saw the program and realised that I was the last speaker for this session, I looked at my title and I thought this must be one of the most undigestible titles of this conference. And so I thought actually what I would do is sort of get rid of that and replace it with, in essence, what I think is sort of the take-home message from my talk, which is really that HIV is a really sneaky virus. And hopefully I will be able to sort of demonstrate that in the subsequent slides. So why is HIV such a sneaky virus? And if we look at the diversity, in essence, this is part of the reason why it's been so difficult to design a vaccine. On the right-hand side of this slide is a depiction of the diversity of HIV. And this is a phylogenetic tree. So in essence, if you think about the center point, the amount of radiation that you see from the center point is a representation of the diversity of that pathogen. And underneath HIV, you'll see another pathogen for which we do have a vaccine, but it's not always 100% effective, and you have to give it every year or so, and that's the flu. And so hopefully what you can see here is that HIV has this amazing diversity that is, in a way, representative or a reflection of its high mutation and replication rate. And underneath it, you have something else which we still haven't got an effective vaccine that lasts for long periods of time. So that sort of gives you an idea of the complexity of HIV. And to a certain extent, ourselves and other groups have been trying to study what is driving or what is part of the reason why HIV is so diverse. And part of that reason is because of the immune system and the way in which HIV tries to escape our immune response. And so in my next slide, I'm going to give you Immunology 101, which is basically just sort of an overview of the immune system and also sort of focus on that arm of the immune system that we are particularly focused on, which is on T cells. So in this particular slide, on the left-hand side, if you imagine HIV here is those brown molecules, then you'll see it's the first part of the immune system is the innate system. It doesn't have a particular memory, so it tends to see the pathogen the same the next time it gets infected. But in essence, it's a series of molecules and cells that are really your first arm of attack against a particular pathogen, including HIV. The second part on the right-hand side is what we term the adaptive immune system, and this is really what you try to prime for vaccinations, for example, and it includes the T and B cells that many of you may be very familiar with. And in this particular scenario, our group has been very much interested in those on the bottom of that, which is the T lymphocytes. And these are important because, as with B cells as well, they also have memory, and as I mentioned, they're also important in vaccination. But T cells are very interesting is that they don't see pathogen quite like antibodies or B cells or some of these other molecules. They only see the virus or the pathogen in the context of yourself. And I'll just sort of explain that on this particular slide. Here we are interested in the T cells and how HIV escapes this arm of the immune system. And on the left-hand side is a depiction of what basically or how HIV is presented to T cells in your body. So on the bottom of that is the infected or the virus-infected CD4 T cell. And there's a certain amount of gymnastics that occurs within every nucleated cell that's infected in which you can actually chop up the particular pathogen, and then a small part of that pathogen is presented on a molecule that's transferred to the top of that infected cell, and that is acting like a beacon. That complex is what is recognised by the T cells in your body. And so this is actually looking at this structure in a little bit more detail. This is this molecule here, this HLA molecule, which is yourself. It's a protein that you actually produce yourself. And that's actually presenting part of the virus on the surface. It's acting as a beacon for the T cell. And in essence, what it's saying is, I'm infected, and you need to do something about it. And in essence, what T cells do is it can kill that particularly virally infected cell. So it's an incredibly effective mechanism that we have to kill cells within our body that are infected with a virus. And this is what can happen with HIV. And others, and some in the audience have heard of me talk about this structure as a little bit like a hot dog. So you have the HLA molecule, which is basically your bun, and you can see that here. And then in the middle is the little piece of HIV, which was presented within that, which is a little bit like your sausage. And the important thing is that HIV has this incredibly high mutation and replication rate, and what can happen is that it randomly mutates its genome, such that you have single amino acid changes within the genome of HIV that can actually land within the sausage, if you like to think of it like that, or part of the virus that's presented by this HLA molecule to a T cell. And when that happens, what can happen is that that can abrogate this particular pathway. So that means that the T cell no longer actually recognizes this particular infected cell. So it's a very effective mechanism utilized by HIV to escape our immune system. So I just want to also use another analogy to think about, well, what happens to these adaptations in your body? And if you can imagine our immune system as an immune drug, a little bit similar to an anti-HIV drug, then what you have on the left-hand side is an individual who's infected by HIV, and they will have a series of very closely related strains called quasi-species. And you can see here they're represented by slightly different colours. And if you give the particular drug, imagine this is your immune system, you will have certain strains within that individual that are are killed by that particular immune drug, but then you'll also have those strains that are resistant. And if you think about what might happen within an individual over the natural history of HIV infection, what happens is that you have these adaptations or changes which can occur. Here it's represented by this purple one, and if that is resistant or is able to escape the immune drug or the immune response, then what happens is that becomes the dominant strain within that individual. And what has been shown by ourselves and other groups is that the amount of adaptation of the virus in your body can be correlated with viral load, so with outcome. So the more the adapted your virus is, the worse you tend to do in the context of viral load. And so our interest has been in really trying to really decipher what are the different mechanisms in which HIV can actually adapt to our immune system. So I'm showing again, on the left-hand side, you have the picture of the infected cell and the T cell, which is identifying this particular infected cell. And on the right-hand side is showing this in much more detail. So here we have the HLA molecule, which is the blue molecule there. In green is part of the virus which is presented. And this top part here is basically what is coming from the T cell. And when you have proper recognition of an infected cell by a T cell, what you tend to have is a number of different T cells that can recognize this sort of structural complex, and that is typically associated with an effective immune response or a good outcome for the host and not so good for the virus. But what HIV can do is, as I mentioned, it can have these mutations that occur in the genome, and what that actually happens in the HIV genome is that a single mutation, here you can see you have a K to an E, a single mutation within its genome can actually abrogate this entire process. And what happens is you have loss of immune escape. Basically you become invisible to that T cell. And when we think about how we might measure this in the laboratory, what we actually measure is something called interferon gamma. It's one of the markers that we use in the laboratory to assess whether or not T cells are actually responding to a particular part of the virus. And so in this particular scenario where you have proper recognition and the T cell is likely to be effective and can kill that infected cell, we have a marker that's telling us that that's all good. And then on the right-hand side, where the virus has mutated and we no longer have this type of complex, what happens is that we don't identify this particular marker. And this is sort of reminiscent or a reflection of what we term this immune escape or viral adaptation. And that is actually is going to be advantageous for the virus and detrimental to the host. And so that's sort of a typical, what we term classical adaptation, what people tend to think about when they think about immune escape. This is the mechanism that they think about, that the virus becomes invisible to the T cell. And so you can see that again on the left-hand side. But what we've actually seen more recently is that there are particular mutations that we've identified within the genome for which, based on all purposes, based on our genetic analysis, it tells us that this mutation is actually should be advantageous for the virus and deleterious to the host. And so what that means is that when we look in the laboratory for markers that represent whether or not there's a T cell response against that part of the virus, we actually see that when we have the normal form, which has an R at this position, and when we see the mutated form that we would have predicted would have been an escape type mutation, we still see this really good marker. So it's sort of incongruent. We can see that there's a response against this particular part of the virus, but our other data is telling us that this is advantageous for the virus and not the host. So what mechanisms could the virus have that would actually allow it to still be, to survive and also do better when it actually mutates, but is still visible to the T cell? And so in essence, there are two sort of hypotheses, is that one is that the type of T cells that recognize this is much more restrictive, and we should be able to assess this if we look at the type of T cells that have been directed against this particular part of the virus. And the other hypothesis is that even though it can recognize this part of the virus, when it does recognize it, it actually doesn't do so well. So the T cell's sort of dysfunctional. And you can imagine that actually may be advantageous for the virus and, of course, detrimental for the host. So how would we go about actually analyzing or differentiating between these two types of hypotheses? Well, what we have to do is actually look at the single cells. And so in essence, that's what we've done, is we've actually identified the single T cells that are responding to the two different types or forms of HIV and a specific area of HIV. So if I just take you through the slide just quickly, basically, if you imagine, here we have a patient that's infected with HIV, and we can obtain our blood samples, and then we stimulate those blood samples with either one of the two forms of HIV that we're interested in, the one that we think is normal and the other one which we think the virus is adapting, and then we capture the T cells that are responding to those virus parts. And once we do that, we can then decipher better, one, what type of T cell is it? What is it recognizing? That is, what is its T cell receptor? And then in the second instance, we also look to see what signature can we extract from what that cell is producing that can tell us something about its function? So can we get a signature from the proteins that cell is likely to be producing that will tell us whether or not it's an effective T cell or a non-effective T cell? And in essence, that's what we've been doing. We've been utilising this approach to obtain, in essence, an ID card for all those T cells that respond to other forms of HIV. So here's an example. So we're interested in this part of the virus. It's only a short part. Remember, I showed you the little part of HIV in the HLA molecule, only a string of between 9 to 10 amino acids. And what we're looking at is how does one single amino acid change alter the way in which our immune system recognizes that particular part of the virus and its downstream effects. And so what we do is we obtain samples from individuals who are chronically infected with HIV, and we stimulate their cells with either one, either the blue form, which has this particular string, and you'll notice the I is underlined, and then the same blood draw, we stimulate the cells with the red string of amino acids, and hopefully you can spot the difference that you've got an I to a V, so a single amino acid change. And then we actually place T cells that are responsive to either the blue or the red into individual cells. So each well in a plate, and that's about the size of your mobile phone, if we then each single well, and there are 96 in those plates, has a single T cell. And so after that, what we do is we then interrogate those cells and we determine, okay, well, of those T cells that responded to the blue virus, what type of T cell receptors do they have? And then we look at those that have responded to the red part of the virus. And what we've identified is that when we look at this in different patients as well, there's a common theme is that it doesn't really matter too much whether you stimulate them with the blue or the red. What you end up with on the outside, that is what that T cell receptor is seeing, is actually similar. So what does that mean in the context of our hypothesis? This was our original hypothesis, one of the ones, that this was going to be restrictive, was going to be different when you looked at the blue versus the red. But in reality, that's not really what we're seeing. And in fact, what we're seeing is that it's probably the same. So the second part of our hypothesis was that, well, maybe when it sees the red versus the blue, the actual type of cell that's responding to the adapted form is actually dysfunctional. And so what we did is we then looked at, again, those individual cells in those particular plates, each one at a time, and we basically extracted the RNA information, the message information that tells you the proteins that are being produced by that cell, and that should tell you something about the function of that T cell. And so here on the left-hand side, you have, again, individual, so blood is stimulated with both the red and the blue form, which only differs by one amino acid. And then we look at all of the sort of transcripts in those individual cells, and that gives you an idea of what that cell is doing. When we did that, This plot here is basically each dot is an individual cell, and we basically tell the computer, this is all my data. I want you to capture all the diversity in that data and give me an output that best represents those cells that are more similar to each other and also tells me which cells are most different to each other. So it's sort of a spread of how similar or how different they are. That's without me telling the computer that these cells have been stimulated by the red HIV and these ones by the blue. And when you do that, what you notice is that the red and the blue sort of separate a little bit, which is really interesting. They're similar cells, but one amino acid change can actually separate these cells a lot. What we don't see is the red and blue intermixed with each other, which is really the main point. And so when we actually look at, well, what are those transcripts? What are those sort of messages that are telling you what's being produced in those cells? When we look at that, what we see is that there's activation of certain genes when you stimulate with the red form of the HIV and others which are stimulated or upregulated when you stimulate with the blue form. So a single amino acid change can make quite a big difference to the phenotype of T cells. So this is just briefly just to show you that a couple of those transcripts or those messages that tell you what's different between these cells, one of them is associated with exhaustion, and it may be, in fact, that one form of adaptation is to make that T cell or our immune system exhausted, and that actually would make it less effective. So to summarise, and this is, if you're interested, this is a much more complicated version of the summary. A more simpler version is basically HIV is really sneaky, and it has multiple mechanisms of adaptation that has made it incredibly difficult for the immune system to keep it under control. So what I'd like to thank everyone involved with the project, of course the patients and support staff, all the funding bodies, and everyone in the group. We're very lucky to have some very talented young scientists in the group, so I thank them especially. Thank you.